2013, in Villa Verdoven, Florence, Italy. Krishna is my friend, and I am Krishna's friend. What? The microphone is dancing.
Okay, now. It's very...
It doesn't stay. So we'll just forget this stand because it doesn't stay. Where it's supposed to stay. My eyes is kind of... Yeah, this is really interesting here. Okay. Making friendship with Krishna. And our first question is why? Why would we want to practice friendship with Krishna? So here Prabhupada gives us two reasons. I'm sure there's more. And he says that we can only understand the Bhagavad Gita if we're Krishna's devotee and Krishna's friend. So otherwise we can keep reading the Bhagavad Gita forever and ever and ever. And studying it forever and teaching it forever and whatever. But unless we become both a devotee and a friend of the Lord, we'll never understand it. And I think that's, you can see even materially how that works. If I'm not someone's friend, why are they going to reveal secret things to me? And another reason is because it's part of the peace formula. Bhaktiram yagatapasam sarvalokamahesham sumudam sarvabhutanam gafanam shanti yajanti sumudam sarvabhutanam. So Krishna is the best friend of everyone. And only someone who understands that can attain peace. So there's two different kinds of friendship. The first kind of friendship is one of the nine processes of devotional service. It's a sadhana. It's a kind of practice that can be done by conditioned souls who have not yet realized their relationship with Krishna. And it can also, of course, be done by those who haven't realized their relationship with Krishna as a sadhana. But this is for everybody. So everybody, no matter who they are, no matter what their relationship is with Krishna, can perform this sakya, one of the nine processes, right? Shravana kirtanam, smadana, lalana, pasyavana, dasura, pujana, sakijana, atmani, vedana. Pujana Saki. So Saki is to be a friend. So again, this is for everyone. And we're talking this morning just like Dasya and the nine processes is for everyone, even if that's not your rasa. Then there's another kind of friendship which is only for some devotees. And that is the friendship that is one of the staimaks, that is one of the rasas. So we're going to look at both of these. So first we're going to look at friendship as a sadhana, as a practice in bhakti. And of course, I'm sure you know there's two levels of sadhana, Vaidhi sadhana and Vardhanuga sadhana. We're going to look at two different kinds of friendship in sadhana. One is called Vishvasa and one is called Mitra. So first we're going to look at Vishvasa. Now Vishvasa means the Lord is my benefactor. I have strong faith. Krishna is my benefactor. So benefactor has to do with the word benefit. Somebody who's going to give me benefit. Someone who cares about me and is going to make sure that I'm taken care of. Now, Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, it says that the word Vishvasa and the word Shraddha, they practically mean the same thing. In other words, this kind of sakya means to have faith. But here, it means the practice for bringing about a particular kind of Shraddha and the best Shraddha. So this Vishvasa, thinking of Krishna as my benefactor, is a process that brings us faith. You can say Vishvasa is faith itself, but here it means a way of being that brings us faith and a way of being that is a top kind of faith one can have. So what is this Vishvasa exactly? This we can understand from, again, Bhagavad Gita 5:29. That thinking that Krishna is the benefactor and well-wisher of all humanities, he's my benefactor. He cares about everyone. That I have the most powerful person is also somebody who's deeply concerned about me, who really loves me, and who's my good friend. So this is, in the material world, if some rich, important person was our good friend, how secure we would feel. What to speak of the person who owns and controls everything, that person is my friend. And sometimes people would say like that, oh, I can get this and this done because this big man is my friend, right? I'll talk to my friend and I'll get it all arranged. Oh, I have some friend, someone will say, I have some friend in the embassy so we can just get your visa, no problem. Or I have some friend in the government and we can get permission for the Rath Yatra. Or I have some friend in the market, we can just get Boga donated. So this Vishvasa is the chief person in the universe, he's my friend. He'll take care of me. You can see how you feel peaceful, huh? So in Bhagavad Gita 2:45, Krishna says, Nir Yoga Kshema Atmavana. Yoga means linking. So yoga means something you don't have that you want to get. And kshema means protection. So protection for what you already have. So Krishna says, Nir Yoga Kshema. Don't worry about what you don't have and don't worry about what you do have. Atmavan, worry about the self. Be absorbed in the self, not in what do I have, how will I protect it, what do I not have, how will I get it. Why in 9:22 he says yoga kshema bahanyaha? Because I will take care of protecting what you have and I will take care of providing what you lack. So this is again Vishvasa, that I just don't think about it, I don't worry about it, I have no anxiety about it. My only anxiety is how to serve my friend, and my friend is going to take care of me. And just like if you work for a very good company, so the company provides everything you need, you don't need to worry about it. You just need to worry about doing your job for the company. And in some temples, perhaps it's like that also. You just need to worry about doing your service, and the temple takes care of your room and your electricity and your light and your food and like that. You don't need to think about it. Many years ago, I did some service for a few weeks at my temple in Europe, and it was exactly like that. All the material needs were just taken care of, and I could just completely 100% focus on my service. So this is the mood of the devotee towards Krishna with Vishvasa, that I just simply worry about serving Krishna, and Krishna will take care of everything. Now, of course, Krishna doesn't always take care of everything exactly the way we would like. But he always takes care of everything in what is factually the best way, although we may not appreciate it at the time. So this Vishvasa is having that appreciation, having that faith that Krishna is taking care of me, and that the way that Krishna is taking care of me is the best way. That even if Krishna takes away something in my life, or even if Krishna doesn't protect what I have in an external material perspective, actually Krishna is both giving me everything I need and protecting everything I have. Although again, I may not see it that way. So this Vishvasa is that complete faith, that total faith, that Krishna is my benefactor and is taking care of me. And therefore all I need to think about is my spiritual life. So of course this is also in the Bible, where David says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures and leaves me behind the still waters, he restores my soul. So David's here talking about material and spiritual. He's talking about himself as if he's a little sheep, and God is the shepherd who gives him water, who gives him grass, and also gives him spiritual restoration in spiritual life. And indeed, that is part of Vishvasa. Part of Vishvasa is not only that the Lord will take care of me materially, but also that Krishna is taking care of me spiritually. That if I just simply follow this process of Krishna consciousness, then Krishna will give me everything I need in order to obtain perfection. I don't need to do something else. I don't need to do Krishna consciousness and something else in order to become perfect. That if I just simply serve Krishna, he will make every arrangement for my not only material needs, but for my spiritual advancement. So we can see this is part of the confidence that Rupa Goswami talks about in the Nectar Instruction, where he says enthusiasm, patience, and confidence. So it's very much related to this Vishvasa aspect of Sakya, that I have confidence that Krishna will deliver me. So this is exemplified, Rupa Goswami, in explaining this process of devotional service, says this is exemplified by Draupadi, who says, oh Govinda, you know, remembering your promise, I maintain my life. Because there were so many times in Draupadi's life where it appeared that she wasn't going to be taken care of, where it appeared that everything was lost, the kingdom was lost, so many things were lost, and it appeared, what is going to happen to me, what is going to happen to me? But she said she's always meditating on this promise of the Lord that I will protect my devotees. And in this way, she doesn't become discouraged. She remains enthusiastic in her service. Of course, Krishna talks about how when Draupadi just called out, you know, hey Govinda, please save me. He said, I felt so indebted. This is one of the examples given in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu of gratitude, that Krishna felt so much gratitude for Draupadi just calling his name, that he protected her honor when the Kurus were trying to destroy her. Krishna is my protector, but one will never give up Krishna's shelter. One sees Krishna not just as the protector materially and spiritually, but the only protector. One doesn't think, well, I can go to Krishna sometimes for some things, but other times I can go to somebody else. Or Krishna's not protecting me the way I want, therefore let me do something else. But this Vishvasa part of Sakya is that one has exclusive shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. And one will not for even a moment think, oh, let me go someplace else, even if one's offered anything else. If one's offered, well, you can become the controller of the universe, you can become a very important person, a very rich person, or this or that. The devotee says, no, Krishna's my only shelter. The devotee's happy to do whatever. The devotee can become a demigod, but not to give up Krishna's shelter. That Krishna is my friend, Krishna is my benefactor, and Krishna is my only friend. Prabhupada talks about how the bona fide guru never says, I am your friend. That the bona fide guru is the friend because they're introducing you to your supreme friend, who's Krishna. So whoever else we have in this world, even the shelter of the devotees, well, the devotees are our shelter because they're bringing us to Krishna. Not that they are Krishna. No, we're not Mayavadis. We don't say the devotees are Krishna. So we don't try to become anyone else's friend in the sense of God. We become their friend in the sense of bringing them to Krishna. And we don't think anyone else is our shelter other than Krishna. So that is this Vishvasa. So Vishvasa is, the Lord is my friend, and he's my only shelter. Whenever there's difficulty, my solace is, the Lord is my friend, the Lord is my friend, the Lord is my friend, the Lord is my benefactor. And we never take anyone else as our benefactor. We never think anyone else is our shelter. Only Krishna is our shelter. So now in the second category of Sakya as a sadhana is Mitra. So Prabhupada explains this Mitra is to become a well-wisher of Krishna. So Visvasa is Krishna is my well-wisher. In Mitra, I am Krishna's well-wisher. And Prabhupada goes on to explain this, that how do we act as Mitra? How do we act as Krishna's friend? Primarily as preaching, as preachers, where Krishna says that someone who's preaching this Bhagavad Gita is the most dear to me. And Krishna says that he wants leaf or flower, fruit or water, right? Patram pushpam palantoyam yome bhakti prajati tadaham yat bhakti paritam ashnami prayadakyana. But what does Krishna want more than leaves, flowers, fruit and water? I mean, Krishna has plenty of leaves, flowers, fruits and water in Goloka Vrindavan. He's not lacking for leaves. He's not lacking for water. He's not lacking for fruits. And he's not lacking for flowers. But there is something that Krishna wants. He wants the conditioned jivas to come back to him. Now again, he's not lacking, he's Atmarama. So it's not that Krishna is suffering in some way because of the conditioned souls are not there. But you could say that he's suffering. You could say he's not suffering, he's always joyful. But still, he has some sorrow that some of his parts and parcels are not happy. So the main thing that Krishna wants is to help the parts and parcels to come closer to him. So one who does that is acting as the well-wisher of God, is acting as the friend of God. And the example given in Krishna book, in several places, Krishna book in the 10th canto, of course, both chapters 21 and 35 and some other places, is Megaha Surudha. Megaha means a cloud, and Surudha means friend. So just like Krishna is Suridham Sarvabhutanam, Krishna is everyone's friend. So the clouds are also the friend of Krishna. So the clouds are considered Krishna's friend, first of all, because they have the same color as Krishna. So even in this world, we tend to think of people as our friends when they are like us. I know when I was preaching in China, and nobody spoke English, I mean, only my translator. And even her English wasn't so good. And no one else spoke English. No one even said hello. And then when I was in the airport leaving China, and I heard some people speaking English, and not only English, but with an American accent, and not only an American accent, but a Northeastern American accent. And immediately I thought, oh, these are friends. It was quite funny. I said hello to them. Oh, where are you from? Oh, where are you from? And just because we spoke the same language in the same way, we felt, oh, we are friends. And I see this, if you even ride on the same train car as somebody, you know, you may be strangers, but you're riding in the same train car, you have some feeling that, oh, these are my friends. This is natural. People in the same family, from the same country, people who have the same color. I've also been in parts of the world where I'm the only one with my color skin. You know, and then I see somebody else who has my same color, and I think, oh, there's a friend. So this is natural. So Krishna also, he feels that the clouds are his friends because they have the same color. But the main reason that the clouds are Krishna's friends is that Krishna is, I guess we said, the benefactor of everyone. He helps people when they're disturbed, when they have difficulty in the blazing fire of material life. Then Krishna puts out that fire with his rain of mercy. And in a similar way, the clouds are the only means of putting out a severe forest fire. So because the clouds also put out great fires, just like Krishna puts out great fires, therefore the clouds are considered Krishna's friend. So this material world, this birth and death, this samsara, is just like a blazing fire. That we have suffering. Nobody wants to suffer. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, oh, today I want to have some pain in my body. Today I want to have some anxiety. Right? Today I want to have some difficulty in my relationships. But it just happens. It happens without anybody doing anything. And this sense of just anxiety and loneliness and pain and fear and grief and anger and greed and dissatisfaction is constantly assailing the conditioned souls in so many forms and so many ways. So therefore, it's just like a forest fire that just starts by itself. It's dry, hasn't rained for a while, and there's some wind and some friction, and the fire simply starts. So even this worldly fire, it can be put out only by a cloud. It's very difficult for ordinary humans just by pouring water to put out a forest fire. So Prabhupada says that this blazing fire of material life, it can be put out by the mercy cloud of the saintly persons. So of course, where is the cloud getting its water? The cloud doesn't have its own water. The cloud is getting its water from the oceans and the rivers and so forth. So the saintly persons, they're not really distributing their own mercy, but they're via media for the mercy of Krishna. And therefore they're acting as the friends of Krishna. They're doing what Krishna wants to be done, taking Krishna's mercy and distributing it liberally. So being this mitra, being with Krishna as I am Krishna's friend, is most shown by being a cloud of mercy, by taking Krishna's instructions and Krishna's kindness and Krishna's mercy and bringing it to people and helping them to put out their fire of material life. Now there's also another way in which we can say that the cloud is the friend of Krishna.
An uncle, congress left, the superior friend, the cloud, instead of pouring water, begins to pour a small piece of flower-like snow and covers the head of Krishna, just like umbrella, to protect him from the scorching sunshine.
So the cloud is considered Krishna's friend because it has the same color as Krishna, the same nature as Krishna. The cloud is considered Krishna's friend because it's doing what Krishna wants to be done. It's doing things that will make Krishna happy by preaching. And it's also considered to be the friend of Krishna because the cloud is caring about Krishna's personal comfort. And the cloud is thinking, oh, it's so hot. Let me make an umbrella for Krishna. And here Prabhupada's saying that the cloud is covering Krishna with, instead of water, little flower-like snow to make an umbrella. So when we are serving Krishna, it should be with this mood of how can I make Krishna happy? How can I make Krishna happy? You know, deity worship, for example, should not be something just ritualistic, but thinking, oh, is Krishna cold today? Or Krishna likes something to eat or like that. I know one devotee who travels with his own deities, and whenever he gets a drink of water, he changes the water for his deities. He thinks, well, if I'm thirsty, maybe they're also thirsty. And I said, well, you're changing your deities' water a lot. He said, well, they're my friends. So I'm taking care of them. So this is this mood of mitra, that I'm doing things just like we would do for a friend. You know, if we had a friend over in our house, we make sure they have a place to sit, we make sure they have water, we make sure they have something to eat, we make sure they have whatever they need, that they're not feeling any discomfort. You know, are you cold? Do you need a heater? Are you hot? Do you need me to get a fan? And not as a servant, but as a friend. So this is also mitra. Then Prabhupada also says, in this purport in the seventh canto, in chapter 5, text 23 to 24, this is where Prahlad Maharaj gives all of the nine processes of devotional service. So it's a very long purport where there's an explanation of each of the nine processes. And here Srila Prabhupada, also talking about mitra, says that mitra may be exhibited by living in a temple. That if you say, I'm going to live in a temple, that may be a sign of mitra in Sakya. And one is saying, I want to be with my friend. Just like you may want to stay with your friend, or want to stay at your friend's house. If I'm visiting a strange city, it's always nice to have a friend I can stay with. So here in the material world, we're far from home. We're in a strange place. But we want to be with our friend. Let me stay in my friend's house and be with my friend. So that is another way that one can be performing the mitra portion of sakya. And then on the higher platform of sadhana, still sadhana bhakti, this is still not saiva, still sadhana bhakti. So the example given by Rupa Goswami is that sometimes a person so much thinks, I am Krishna's friend, that they may lie down in the temple. They're thinking, oh, Krishna's just my friend. I'll just lie down and be with my friend. So Rupa Goswami explains that this kind of behavior, where one becomes very casual with Krishna, very intimate with Krishna, is more in the platform of Raghunuga sadhana. It's still sadhana. This is not staipa, but it's still sadhana. Rather than Vaidhi sadhana, because it's not performed in awe and reverence. And again, Rupa Goswami says, but this practice of sakya is done in both Vaidhi and Raghunuga sadhana. So Mitra is, I am the well-wisher of the Lord. Vishvasa is, the Lord is my well-wisher. Mitra is, I am the Lord's well-wisher. And I want to help others in their distress, just like Krishna does. And I want to also relieve Krishna of any inconvenience. And I may also see him as a very intimate person and serve him informally. Okay, we finished looking now at sakya as one of the nine processes of devotional service. And we're going to very briefly look at sakya as a saibhav. Sakya is one of the rasas. And I say very briefly because Rupa Goswami has a huge section in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu on the sakya as a saibhav, sakya ras, sakya rakti. And also there's so many sections in Prabhupada's books, of course, in the Nectar Devotion. There's two whole chapters dedicated just to Sakyarati, and just like this morning in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we were also reading a section on Sakyarati, and you'll find many, 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 many places that describe great detail of Sakya as a bhav, as a particular humor of relationship with Krishna. So we're not at all describing all the details here, this is just an overview. So again, this is just for some devotees. So where every devotee is expected to perform the sakya of sadhana, only some devotees are going to have the sakya bhav. And Rupa Goswami, before talking about it, he says that he offers his respects to these friends. And how does he describe them? Deep trust, which of course is very similar to the sakya as a sadhana, without any restriction. Without any fear. So this is the primary characteristic of sakya bhav, as differentiated from dasya bhav, that in dasya bhav, the servant is thinking, oh, Krishna's my master. If I do the wrong thing, if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to get in trouble. I always have to have him as superior to me. I can't be familiar. Whereas those in sakya rati are thinking, hey, the Lord's my buddy. You know, he's my buddy. So I can joke with him, I can say, hey, you're not so strong, whatever. And they're not at all afraid that Krishna's going to be offended. So we have that with some friends in this world, right? Probably not absolutely. But we have some friends that we feel that we can be joking and even insulting, and they're not going to be insulted. And they're thinking that they're equal to Krishna. Just like after Krishna swallowed the fire and brought the boys back to Bandiravan, they thought, oh, maybe Krishna's a demigod. Well, if he's a demigod, then so are we demigods. So they're thinking like that. So there's two main categories of friends. There's city friends, and there's friends in Vraja. So first we're going to look at the city friends. So, of course, the Pandavas, Sudama Brahmana, Draupadi, especially Arjuna, are some of Krishna's friends in the city. Here you see the Pandavas with Draupadi and Kunti.
Sayevayam Maya Tetya Yoga
So this is, of course, Krishna saying to Arjuna, I'm speaking to you because you're my devotee as well as my friend. Arjuna is considered the epitome, the top friend of Krishna in the city. And here's one example of Arjuna showing his friendship. So when Ashwatthama was shooting Krishna, Arjuna stood in front of Krishna and took Ashwatthama's arrows into his own body. And because Arjuna felt such ecstasy for Krishna, it seemed to him that the arrows were just flowers hitting his body. He didn't experience it as any kind of suffering. Okay, now we're going to go to Krishna's friends in Vraja. So we have four kinds of friends in Vraja. Of course, there's different kinds of friends in the city also. Just like Maharaj Yudhisthira and Bhima are older than Krishna, Arjuna is the same age, Nakula and Sahadeva are younger, and so forth. So these are not only categories in Vraja. But in Vraja, we have the friends who are older, whose friendship is mixed with parental and protective, some who are a little younger, whose friendship is mixed with service, and those who are the same age, and some who are intimate, who are called confidential, and who are most intimate, called intimate. So here's some examples. The well-wisher friends, these are the older friends, like Balaram, Balabhadra, and Mandalibhadra. And the friends are the ones who are a little younger, like Devaprastha. And friends who are the same age and who are confidential are like Sridhama and Sudama. And friends the same age who are the most intimate are like Subal and Ujjvala. Now, the most intimate friends are even involved with Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, so they'll take messages back and forth between Krishna and the gopis and so forth. About his friends in Vrindavan. So one time he said to Balaram, my dear brother, when my companions were being devoured by the Agasura, hot tears poured down from my eyes. And as they were washing my cheeks, my dear elder brother, for at least one moment I completely lost myself. So this is Krishna's feeling of friendship for his friends. So of course Krishna is a friend of everyone. This is particularly his sense of friendship for his friends. What will happen if my friends are hurt? And how do Krishna's friends feel about him? So they say, you spent 7 nights standing constantly without sleep, holding up Govardhan. You must be very tired. Oh, my friend Krishna, throw the mountain onto Sridham's hand. Our minds are very disturbed seeing you in this condition. Or at least place the mountain in your right hand. Then we will be able to massage your left hand. So Krishna, as the friend, is always thinking how to save and protect his friends, and Krishna's friends are always thinking how to serve him, how to save him. They each have anxiety over the other's anxiety, right, as real friends. So what are the udipans, or the stimulus for friendship? Well, there's Krishna himself. Those who are in the Sakya Bhav, they feel these feelings of friendship from Krishna himself, from meditating on Krishna's other friends, and also from Krishna's age, his beauty, his bugle, his flute, his attitude. All of these and many, many more invoke this feeling of friendship in Krishna's friends. So to summarize, that friendship is first of all a sadhana for everyone. That friendship is part of our practice of sadhana bhakti, by which we attain perfection. And this has two categories. One is visvasa, the Lord is my friend and protector, and mitra, I am the Lord's friend, and I try to make him happy. And then friendship is also a rasa, a sakya sthai bhava, for just some devotees, And Krishna has city friends and country friends. He has friends who are older, friends who are younger, and friends who are the same age. So questions, comments, discussions?
Yeah, well, it's more or less deepening what we have heard today morning. Mm. So it's nice to see visual. I don't have any
questions. Anyone else have any question? Anything you want to discuss? Okay. So we often use the word rasa for really what we're talking about is just part of rasa. It's perhaps a little sloppy, but you know, we use the word rasa to indicate Staibhav, which is one of the five aspects of rasa. Now, just Staibhav by itself does not give you rasa. If you have some feeling, particular feeling for somebody, but you don't act on it in any way, and none of the other elements are there, there's no taste that happens. So really, rasa means all five. It means that there has to be... there has to be a vibhava, which are the stimulus. Then there has to be your staibhava. Then there has to be anubhava, your actions. There has to be vyavichari bhava, the transient emotions, and the sattvika bhava, or the involuntary expression. So all of those, only when you have all of those together do you really have rasa. Rati literally means love. And it has an erotic connotation because Rati is the wife of Cupid. So the word Rati sometimes is used just simply to mean sexual love or erotic love. But Rati is also used in a general way. I mean, Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, Atma Rati, that the yogi has love for the self, to relish and rejoice in the self. He talks about Atma Tushta, being satisfied with the self, and Atmarati. So bhav also means an emotion. So you can talk about sakya bhav or sakyarati. This morning in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada was referring to it as sakyarati. But we also, sort of loosely, we'll talk about the sty bhavs as if they were rasas in and of themselves. But in and of themselves, they're not. They have to be combined with the other in order to be rasas. Ordinary. It's just like the word karma literally means work. But we'll use karma to mean karmic reactions. Oh, that's your karma. But that's not really the literal meaning of the word. The literal meaning of the word karma is activity or work. That's not what we mean when we say that. We mean, oh, this is what you're getting back because of what you did. And generally, even we use that negatively. We generally mean, this is the bad reaction for something sinful that you did. Which would really not even be karma, it would be vikarma. But it's sort of a looser meaning. So if we say there's five rasas, five primary rasas, it's loose, it's a loose. So, actually, the first is the vibhav. Vibhav is what is stimulating your feelings. Again, if you see some small, helpless, cute creature, that stimulates your feeling, your parental feelings. Right? It's the being itself. Other people maybe who are interacting with that being in a parental way. So if you see a cute little child, I was in an airport somewhere in the world, I don't remember where, a year or so ago, and there was this family that was taking their two children traveling, and one of them was a little girl about 3-4 years old, and she was dressed up in some sort of costume, which is very unusual. You don't usually see children traveling dressed up in a costume. And it was some sort of like, what would you say, like a little fairy or something kind of costume. So she looked particularly charming in this little costume. I mean, it was somewhat ridiculous, really, to be in an airport in a fairy costume. But it still, she looked sort of charming. And she was sort of dancing and running around the gate while we were waiting to board the plane. So there was the little girl herself is the stimulus. And then the behavior of her parents, or her parents were behaving with her very affectionately. So that's another kind of stimulus to your own parental feelings. So when you just see the child, you feel some parental feelings. When you see how affectionately and caringly the parents were dealing with the child, that was also a rise to parental feelings. When you saw practically everybody in the area was dealing with this little girl with a lot of affection, people were smiling and so forth. So seeing everyone else's behavior was also the stimulus. Then there were specific things, like the costume she was wearing, or the way she was kind of dancing around the gate, and her voice and her language and so forth and so on. So that's Vibhava. Vibhava is divided into Alambana and Udipana. So Alambana is Krishna himself. Krishna is always the Vishaya. Krishna is always the object of any of the feelings of relationships. So no matter what, whether you're talking about Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, or Madhuryadatras, Krishna is always going to be the Vishaya. Krishna is always going to be the object. So Krishna, he himself is what invokes that feeling. And then there's the Ashraya. The Ashraya are the other devotees who have that mood. So if when you see Krishna, or you hear about Krishna, or you think about Krishna, or you touch Krishna, you immediately have feelings of friendship, or feelings of servitude, or feelings of parental, or feelings of conjugal, those feelings will also be invoked by contact with the other devotees who have a similar feeling. So the gopis feel an invoking of their romantic feelings for Krishna by being with the other gopis. You know, the gopis are talking together, Krishna's not there, and they're talking together, you know, did you see the Nanda's son playing his flute, and they're talking about him. And being together and talking about him also brings out their own feelings. In fact, taking shelter of a devotee in the same mood is a very important part of Raghunuga Sadhana. So that not only do you meditate on Krishna in that mood, but you also meditate on a devotee who's in the same mood as you, who inspires you in that mood. So, oh, this devotee is serving Krishna in that way. I want to serve Krishna like that also. You know, when we were hearing the story of Gopal Kumar, this kept happening to him, that he would see how Indra was serving Krishna. He thought, oh, I want to serve Krishna like that. We saw how Brahma was serving Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. So this happens at the top. And we see this again, even in our ordinary sadhana, our ordinary Vaidhi sadhana, it's like that. We may see someone who's a pujari and think, oh, I'd like to dress the deities like that. I'd like to cook for Krishna like that. Or I wish I could distribute a lot of books like that person. And we get inspired by a particular devotee or a group of devotees who are doing a service that attracts us. So that's another of the, that's in the Alambana, that Krishna as the Vishaya and the devotees as the Ashraya. Then there's details. Krishna's form, Krishna's age. So what particularly attracts the devotees in Vatsalya Rati is that Krishna's very young. What particularly attracts the devotees in Madhurya Ras is that Krishna's an adolescent. So that Krishna's age, Krishna's form, Krishna's beauty. And in one sense, you can't say these things are separate from Krishna, but in another sense, they're counted separately. So here also, Krishna's devotees are counted separately as an Udipan. So although Krishna's devotees are the Alambana, they're the Ashraya, they're the shelter of your feelings, they also stimulate your feelings in different ways. not exactly as a shelter, or Krishna's flute, or Krishna's particular pastimes. So all of these things are going to be udipans. And each of the Sai Bhavs has somewhat different udipans from each other. So what stimulates, what kind of udipan stimulates someone in Dasya Bhav is a little different than the udipans that stimulate somebody in Madhurya Bhav, although some things obviously are in common. You know, the cowherd boys and the gopis are both enchanted by Krishna's flute, but in different ways. So Krishna's flute is acting as an udipan. And Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Prabhupada Nectar Devotion list which udipans are stimulating for which people in which bhav. So that's all in the category of vibhav. So you could say that's the beginning in one sense. What is it that invokes it? You know, before I have a friendship with someone has to light it. Something has to spark it. Right? You don't just wake up in the morning and say, oh, I have friendship with so-and-so that you'd never met and you have no contact with. But there's something. I met a god sister some years ago in Hawaii for the first time. And after talking to her for 5 minutes, I looked at her and said, I really would like to be your friend. So that something starts that. Or, you know, romantic feelings. You see someone, or you hear about them, or they speak, or something. Or, you know, somebody else is in love with them, or something like that, or someone you want to serve. I was in a temple a while ago where it was run by a husband and wife, and the wife was constantly cooking. And at one point, I just looked at her and said, I just feel like I want to serve you. I just kind of had this overwhelming feeling. I don't know if we'll actually show this. I don't know if we'll get to it. I had this overwhelming feeling that, you know, I just really want to serve you. So those are all of the vibhav. Then there's the Staibhav. And the Staibhav is, again, what we normally think of in the Hare Krishna movement when we talk about rasa. So the Staibhav is, you know, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, or Sringara. Those are the five primary, and then there's seven secondary. The seven secondary, one of them is comedy, which means comedy, joking, laughter. So some people, their primary relationship, their main relationship is that of comedy, like who? Like Madhu Mangal, yes. Now Madhu Mangal is also Krishna's friend, but his main relationship with Krishna is that of comedy. And then there's also anger. And there's also disgust. So some of the residents of Vrindavan, like Jatila and Kutila, they have these sort of main rasas with Krishna. Then there's also karuna ras. Karuna ras means compassion, but also grief. So when the resident, when Krishna is in the coils of Kali, are people experiencing karuna ras? And karuna ras, of course, is very connected with the parental ras. But there's some have their primary is karuna ras. Then you have chivalry, like Bhishma. His main relationship with Krishna was that of chivalry. And then you have wonder, surprise, astonishment. Six or seven. Fear. There's also fear. So that can be the main way that somebody deals with Krishna can be those seven secondary, or those seven secondary can be part of the five primary. Does that make sense to everybody? And all of those are blissful. Even the anger and fear and disgust are also blissful, just like even in this world, or sorrow. Just like even in this world, people take pleasure at a sad movie, or they take pleasure at a horror movie, or a scary movie. So there's some pleasure like that. So that's the next category of rasa, which is the staibhav. Stai means where you stay. So that's, it's Prabhupada calls it permanent ecstasy. It's what you always are. So you always are a friend, or you always are a servant. Now, please keep in mind that each of those have so many subcategories. Like we just looked today at Sakyarati and how you can be a city friend or a country friend. You could be a little older friend, a little younger, same age, different degrees of intimacy. So right there you have at least eight categories. Then each of those have subcategories, and each of those have sub-subcategories, sub-subcategories, down to each jiva. So each jiva has their own unique relationship with Krishna. It's not that every cowherd boy has the same relationship. Everyone has their own unique relationship with Krishna. So the sti bhavas can be put into these main categories, 5 categories, 12 categories. Then each of them have subcategories. And Rupa Goswami explains many of the subcategories in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in terms of Ujjwala Ras, yeah, the Sringara Ras, Madhurya Ras. He has a separate book called Ujjwala Nilamani where he just talks about Krishna's conjugal relationships, and there he gives many, 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 many subcategories and in different areas. So he'll, you know, figure out, okay, there's 350 kinds of gopis in this area, and there's something, you know, like that. But again, really it goes down to each jiva. So you have the impetus for one's basic relationship, then one's basic relationship. Then you have how you, what you do. You do something, so that's called the anubhavas. You dance, you sing, you go on picnics, you go swimming in the water, there's things you do. So those are the anubhavas. Then there's things you do, but unintentionally. Those are the sattvika bhavas. That's like crying, shivering, fainting, perspiring. So you decide, I'm going to go play with Krishna in the water today. That's an anubhava. You don't decide, I'm going to perspire. But you do that, and those are both ways of expressing your love, ways of expressing your relationship. So the anubhavas and the sattvika bhavas. Then the vyabhichari bhavas, also called the sanchari bhavas, those are various emotions that come and go. Those are considered like waves in the ocean. So when Krishna's in Kaliya, then people are feeling grief and they're feeling relief, and so they're going through different waves of emotions. But they don't stay. So in the sti bhav, you have certain feelings that are always there, and then in the vyabhichari bhavs, you have certain feelings that come and go depending on the particular lila that's happening. So all 5 of those together make rasa. Yes. Well, Prabhupada says many times that we should serve Krishna according to our taste. So, of course, there's this basic sadhana that everyone's expected to do. Of course, you also have a kind of, I don't know how to say this, but generally there should be 2 kinds of people who live in a temple. You have the students and the retired people. Are generally the ones who should live in the temple. So students mean you're young. Traditionally it meant you were a child. And you were in the Brahmacharya ashram because you were going to school. And you probably actually didn't live in a temple then. You probably lived in your guru's house with a family. But the Brahmacharya ashram means you're under strict discipline, like a child. You know, when you're a child, you have to ask your parents' permission to go outside and play. No, you don't have to do that when you're an adult. I don't have to ask somebody's permission, can I leave my room and walk outside? But when I was a child, I did. I couldn't just go anywhere I wanted. And the Brahmacharya ashram is supposed to be like that for children, where you have a schedule. Okay, at 9:15, you polish the silver. At 9:30, you transfer the plates. At 10 o'clock, you go out and book the shoes. Anyway, you have a schedule. And somebody is keeping you to that schedule, and somebody is supervising you all the time. And the Brahmacharya ashram is meant for training. Prabhupada said it's meant for training in values and specific training for a livelihood. So I don't know why at all. Well, I guess I do know, but you know, we got this sort of thing in ISKCON that you should try to stay in the Brahmacharya ashram as long as possible. So that, of course, is not at all Vedic. So in Vedic society, is if somebody could stay a brahmachari all life, that was encouraged. But not, it was not encouraged that people stayed in the brahmachari ashram their whole life. Now, some people did, but very, 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 very few. Because that means you're a student your whole life, you never leave school. So again, we have people like that, even materialistic people like that in the world. where they just study one thing after another, and they're researchers, and they get two or three PhDs, and they do postdoctoral research, and they never leave the school. They don't even teach. So the traditional brahmachari was not a teacher. The traditional brahmachari was a student. And of course, they also beg from door to door, which would involve our prasadam distribution and book distribution. But they're under very, very strict authority. So if someone's in the brahmachari ashram, the idea is that they're getting strict training and they should be discovering their tastes. Part of the purpose of the student ashram is that the guru helps the student to discover their talents and their tastes and gives them training according to their particular tastes. So that should actually be going on in a proper brahmachari or brahmacharini ashram. It should be a school. And we should celebrate when people graduate, because that's what you do. You celebrate when people graduate. And you make sure when they graduate they have the proper skills. Now again, we haven't done a very good job of this in ISKCON, both in our gurukuls for our children and in our brahmachari ashrams for our adults, although I think that's changing. You know, we've had people, they'll be in the brahmachari ashram for 15 years, and when they're ready to marry, they don't have any skills. Whereas Prabhupada says it's for specific training for a livelihood. Now, who else is going to live in a temple besides the students? Well, the other people who are going to live in a temple would be the teachers. And mostly it's going to be retired people. Prabhupada talked about how the vanaprastha couples could go to, say, Vrindavan or Mayapur and live in our centers there. So temple ashram living is also for people who are retired. They've already had their family, they already had their occupation, their children have grown up, and now they're retiring from life and they're just doing full-time service in the temple. So those people already know what their talents are, they already know what their tastes are, and they're mature people. Those are not people that should be strictly under authority like a student. You know, brahmachari ashram is the least independent, then grihastha is more independent, then vanaprastha is this, then vanaprastha is the more independent, then sannyasa is the most independent. So you would have vanaprasthas, either single people or couples, who might stay in a temple ashram and do full-time service. Then, of course, you also have people who never marry. Now, some of them stay in the brahmachari ashram and they stay under that strict disciplinary system their whole life. But some are going to go right from the brahmachari ashram to the vanaprastha ashram. And they're not going to work in the world, they're not going to have an occupation out in the world, they're not going to have a house, they're not going to have a family, but they're going to also become a mature person. Basically, they're going right from being a student to being retired. So you can see that's a little unusual. But those people should already have their tastes. So we should know who's who in the ashram. So if people are in the ashram as vanaprasthas or sannyasis, their situation is very different from those who are in the ashram as brahmacharis. And of course, Prabhupada sometimes let grihasthas live in a temple. Although I think we do that less and less and less. And that's certainly not very traditional, the idea that grihasthas live in the temple and have children and so forth and so on. You know, and when grihasthas lived in a temple, Prabhupada said they have to live separately. I mean, they almost were living like they were vanaprasthas. They were sort of not regular grihasthas. So that's part of the answer. You know, those who are in training should be developing their tastes, and those who are already retired, they should be able to, they should have the independence to serve according to their tastes and according to their talents. And whenever we think everybody should be like me, then we can be sure that we're in illusion. Anything else? Nothing else on this? Okay.